A podcast of the cinema, hosted by...
We almost said that at the same time.
I know.
I got to turn down my volume.
Yes, you do. I'm Alonso Duraldi. I'm the film reviews editor at The Wrap, co-host of the Who Shot You podcast on Maximum Fun. And what the heck is going on over there?
I'm trying to make things not happen on my laptop.
Well, you're doing the very opposite.
Volume is up, and now a video has started playing... against my will. Like, I didn't ask for that to happen. It just started happening.
Welcome to professional podcasting, and I'm a co-host on What the Flick, and the love of my life over there who can't run his own laptop is Dave Weiss.
I try real hard.
Who is also a film critic.
Sometimes.
And we are married all the time.
But most of the time, I'm just not good at my computer.
Okay, then. All right.
Trying to make the video stop. I got the volume turned down.
Well, that's a start.
Now I'm trying to make the video stop.
Okay.
People are yelling. In my head, you're yelling at me.
Yeah, I could you feel it? Because I am. I'm totally yelling at you in my head.
I did it. I successed.
Hooray!
I successed it all.
You win at computers. Whew.
Oy. Open the tomb, Lara Croft, and raid it.
Make with the raiding already.
When will you raid the tomb?
Yeah, we saw that trailer this morning. I saw both of the Angelina Jolie, Lara Croft movies. Could not tell you a thing about them to save my life. Don't remember what they're about.
Nope.
Who else is in them?
Nope.
Nothing.
Me don't know.
They wiped clean.
I saw them and reviewed them.
Yeah.
And I don't remember 1 second.
That movie is coated with Teflon. Did not stick at all to my brain.
So seeing the trailer for the new one today with Alicia Vikander.
Yes.
Made me think.
Academy Award winner.
This is what getting an Oscar will do for you.
Well, actually, was Angelina Jolie already an Academy Award winner when she did the first ones?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
See, women, Hollywood has these great opportunities for you to put on these little shorts and jump off of things.
Okay, so I'm watching this trailer, and I'm thinking, ooh, Kristen Scott Thomas.
True.
And then I'm watching this trailer, and I'm thinking, ooh, Walton Goggins.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's Lara Croft, Tomb Raider. And he actually says, Walton Goggins goes, open the tomb. And I just thought to myself, I can't, no. No. No, I won't see it. I won't.
No.
No one can make me. Not even this podcast, which is apparently my job.
Apparently. One would think.
But I just am not...
Listeners.
It's not going to happen.
Do you want Dave to see Lara Croft Tomb Raider?
This is not up for public vote.
I think if enough people wrote in the show and said, no, I really need to know what Dave thinks about Lara Croft Tomb Raider, and they sent that sentiment to linoleumpodcast@gmail.com... Perhaps you will buckle under and attend with me because I'm going to have to see it.
No, listen, I'm going to tell you a thing.
Tell me a thing.
This podcast is a very small potatoes kind of enterprise. But we do, in our own small way, have a listenership.
Mm-hmm.
You yourself recently told me that we are running somewhere between 25 and 30,000 downloads a month now.
That's true.
Okay, now that's a thing. We've grown some over the past 7-ish years.
What was shouted at me today?
That was funny. We're going to go back a little bit. We went to see the 1517 to Paris this morning at the Grove. Oh, and by the way, someone Instagrammed the fact that we were there before the movie started. You have no, you have no concern for whether or not the crime people might come to this house while we are away and Instagramming that fact and ransack, burgle, also maybe hide in here with weaponry.
I'm usually
to murder us when we come home.
Of
you
your,
don't think.
Of your panics about people knowing that we're both out of the home. It slipped my mind this morning. And when we came home, all of nothing had been stolen. So, but forgive me anyway.
I will forgive you. Don't let it happen again.
Uh-huh.
I pull up Twitter, and I see that you've not only told all of Instagram, but all of Twitter as well. You mark my words, when the crime people come here, it will be your fault.
Fine.
That's what will happen.
Invariably, it will be my fault anyway. So.
All right, so we go to the Grove to see 517 to Paris, 1517 to Paris.
Yes.
That's 3:17 p.m.
P.M.
By the way. Okay. So, we first go to the farmer's market, get some donuts and some coffee. We go to Monsieur Marcel, pick up some marmalade because I need it. Also, I was looking for Umbrian lentils. They don't have any.
I'm shocked.
I just learned that Umbrian lentils were an actual thing. Mm. They're lentils grown in Umbria.
Hence the name.
They're in a recipe that I want to make, and I had to go hunt for them, but now I can't find them anywhere. I'm going to have to order them from the internet. It's so frustrating.
Ugh.
It's real. It's, you know what? It's hard being me.
Cruel, cruel world.
We're walking from the farmer's market into the Grove area because they are two separate entities, but they are right next to
each
other.
They're adjoining, yes.
And they seamlessly flow into
right.
each other. Okay.
So we're walking past the Barnes & Noble.
And some guy, big, big dude, he's like 6'6".
Mm-hmm.
Big, lummoxy looking dude.
A strapping gentleman.
Walks into Barnes & while walking into Barnes & Noble, we're about 30 feet away, he yells, "What the flick? What's up?"
And Dave turns to me and he goes, "Hey, Footloose."
Kevin Bacon used to talk about how people would just yell, "Hey, Footloose."
Yes. At him. So I got "Hey, Footloose" this morning.
You were so on it, too. You said, "Good morning." Like, you were very... If it had been me, I'd be like, "What? Huh? Who, me? Stranger!" That's how I am all the time.
Indeed. So, okay, you were saying that we have a growing fan base or a something fan listenership. What?
Yeah. Okay, so whole lot of y'all out there now. People I don't even know. Some of y'all never have told us who you are or how you found us or never have written in. You're a longtime listener, or maybe you're a new listener, but you've never communicated with us.
Now is the time to communicate by telling Dave that he needs to see Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
No. Now is the time for you to understand that I should not be made to do anything that I don't want to do. I should not be forced by public vote to do any single one thing that I don't want to do. If it doesn't suit my fancy...
Oh, I see. Okay.
Fine. I should not have to do it.
You are the one who is always coming up with having people write in to say which one of us they like better, but
that was the old me.
The new me doesn't engage
in those sort of silly antics.
I see.
But if you have a preference,
you're just mad because you lost the nuts and banana
I
bread.
I did lose the banana nut, the banana bread walnuts
on
versus
linoleum knife and fork.
No walnuts.
Yes.
Survey. Debate. But, okay. Answer, no walnuts, please.
Sorry. America says walnuts. Or actually, the world, because we do have listeners
all over the world now.
Yeah. The world says walnuts,
people,
Dave.
All over the world. We got a postcard from South Korea this
yes.
week. Yes. Yeah. I'll be reading it later.
It was wooden.
Yes, it's a wooden postcard from South Korea. Okay, so I don't want to see this movie. I promise you, on the week of its release, I will see something really great.
Mm-hmm.
And I will tell you all about the whatever it is that I saw that was really great in lieu of Tomb Raider. You can go watch Tomb Raider because that's your job. What the flick? What's up? My job in the 2+ years since leaving movies.com, where I was forced to watch every single thing.
Yes.
My job is now to do as I please, to be my own boss, to assert my own authority over my own life.
But I'm your boss.
My agency, my body, no means no.
You will bend to the will of our listenership if they so decide.
I shan't. Go on, write your little emails. See if I care. Not happening. Okay, so
maybe we'll have to do Madeline that week or something, and you'll have to see it anyway. God. Like the Pixels incident.
Look, if they email us, we'll just say, I got the rockin' pneumonia.
The boogie woogie flu. That's an old Bloom County.
So I have other things to talk about.
I'm sure you do.
Before we get to discussing these films, we're going to talk about the movies in a minute. Hang on.
Yes.
You have now seen the first poster image, as have I, for the forthcoming remake of A Star Is Born.
Oof.
Starring Bradley Cooper.
Yes.
And Lady Gaga.
Right.
Okay.
Who is not called Lady Gaga on the poster.
Stephanie Germanotta, I think is her last
something
name.
Something like that.
I think her last name is Germanotta. Yeah. I think. Don't come at me, little monsters. I don't know her last name.
Anyway, her real name is on the poster.
Her real name is Lady Gaga. Okay.
Her given name is on the poster then.
It is her name because she gave it to herself. Do you understand? All right. That poster looks like the photographer rubbed a human turd on the lens.
It looks like it's a sequel to The 33, the movie about the trapped Chilean miners.
Sprayed pukey things on Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper and then set them against a muddy brown filter.
Mm.
Like, there is not a grosser looking poster. Or two attractive people.
A Star Is Born to the center of the earth.
Two attractive people in this poster who look like hell soaked in feces. And I don't understand.
What's brown and sounds like a bell?
Yeah. Well, I don't. Who?
Dung.
I don't understand what they think is going to make. Like. Well, you see this poster and you think to yourself, wow.
It's so gritty.
I can't wait to watch this.
An earth tone is born.
Oh.
Look, the fact that they're bad ideas. The fact that they're even remaking this in the world of rock. Because, like, you know, Bradley Cooper is playing bass or something in this poster.
Remember that Gwyneth Paltrow movie about the country strong?
Was that Country Strong.
Remember that? That was kind of a Star Is Born-ish.
A little bit. It was, you know, a little all about Eve-ish. It was a lot stupid.
Really stupid.
Oh, a lot stupid. But I mean, I remember back when I used to temp and I worked at Warner Brothers and I would sit in their script department doing nothing but answering 4 phone calls all day.
Yes.
Reading all these scripts in the closet. And one of them was the now accused of sexual misdoings, Israel Horovitz, wrote a remake of A Star Is Born that was meant to star Whitney Houston and Denzel Washington.
Right.
And the male lead was like an action movie star.
Yeah.
And the female lead was a sort of church girl gospel singer who becomes a popular singer and movie star.
Yes.
And Whitney apparently eventually left the production because she was afraid that people would just think it was about her and Bobby Brown.
Well, yeah.
Which, yeah. Make of that what you will.
Yeah.
But that was at least different enough from the previous versions that it felt like its own thing.
No, this new one should star Remy Ma and Fat Joe. If you want to be, let's be real about this. That's who it should star.
But, you know, this just seems like, oh, brother, we're getting back into Streisand territory with this. Because, I'm sorry, that's the weakest of the three versions.
What?
Of the three, A Star Is Born.
Come on.
It is.
It is. Okay, shh, it is. But it is. Come on, you know you love watching it.
But in, for the wrong reasons. I like laughing at it because it's absurd.
Hey, Barbara. Help me move into my new apartment this week.
If you've never read our friend Dennis Hensley's book, Screaming Party, it is a must. And there's a whole section, there's a chapter where Dennis and his friends, one of whom is an amalgam character that Dave and I are part of, watch the Barbara Streisand A Star Is Born, and she makes
We begin playing a game that we call Hey Barbara.
There's a point in the film where she makes this sort of withering look.
A series of withering looks.
Yes. Yeah. And so we started playing a game called Hey Barbara, where we would pause the DVD and, like, ask her some question and then unpause
some
it.
Some irritating question or some, like,
untoward request.
Some horrible, like, taxing favor. Can you come over and help me move?
Do you mind driving me to the airport in the morning? Hey, Barbara. Anyway,
it's
yeah.
It's a fun game that you can, too, also play while watching the Barbara Streisand A Star Is
Yes, Born. And you'll need the entertainment by that point.
Oh, frankly. No, you won't. It's fully entertaining. That film is a full 2 days of entertainment.
I was going to say, it's
a very long film.
It is hella long.
And it's got Kris Kristofferson being real cool. It's got Barbara Streisand being real
Barbara Streisand.
Curly Harry. And singing groovy songs.
True.
Where she does the rock. And you can't listen. If that movie's on TV, I'll sit down and look at it.
But, like, let's face it, the Judy one is the best.
The Judy one is glorious.
Yes, it is. It is
and important. It's cinematically important.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the Janet Gaynor one is a solid sort of old school,
from
you know,
30s,
love
right?
story.
Yeah, yeah.
30s or 40s, yeah. With young Frederick March. But the Streisand one is just too much. And so the fact that this one looks like it's hewing in that direction of, like, he's a rocker and she's a... the hot up-and-coming singer is like, ugh, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I will keep an open mind, but I worry. But yes, that poster's the worst.
All right. Let us talk about the 1517 to Paris.
Oh, sure.
We begin the 1517 to Paris, the latest from Clint Eastwood. And who wrote it?
A woman who's a first-time screenwriter.
She's not good at her job.
No.
I forget her name. It doesn't matter. This is one of the weirdest, worst scripts.
The whole production is an odd
it is.
Series of ideas, but we'll get there.
We begin with a tip of the hat to Robert Bresson. As we see the terrorist walking through the train station, and he's just a collection of moving feet and hands and legs and arms.
In a backpack. We never get his face.
We never get him head to toe. We get...
piecemeal.
We get pieces of him, which is something that Bresson did a lot.
Right.
And then we get more Bressonian action.
In the casting.
In the casting in which the real-life guys, the three guys... who were part of a group of approximately 5 or 6 people who subdued this terrorist.
Right.
In the closing credits, they actually tell you in the closing credits that there were 2 train employees, they list them by name, who were given the French Legion of Honor medal for their part in taking this guy down.
Yeah.
We never see them in the film, though, because they're French.
Because if we've learned anything from Sully, it's that Clint Eastwood cannot be bothered with the parts of the story he doesn't think are interesting.
Right.
Or is perfectly happy to make up whole new parts of the story that never happened if he thinks they're more interesting.
But before we get to the Bressonian models, because that's what Bresson called his actors, very often people who had never been in a film before, people who were not trained as actors, people who... whose job it was to recite dialogue as intentionally
flatly as
affectless as possible.
Yeah.
to diminish the theatrical nature of acting. It worked for Busan. But when you have a person on stage, on screen, who is doing it without any help, then there's a problem. The donkey in Ohasard Baltasar was more emotive than these three heroic heroes. Men. They yeah. are legitimate heroes. They are also not actors. And they are forced, bless their hearts,
to play themselves.
To play themselves and to act opposite people like Judy Greer and Jenna Fischer. And you can see, you know, the people who are actors all around them just sort of looking at them like, oh, I'm going to help you through this scene if I can. Except very often they're in scenes just with each other.
Yeah.
And the first 75 minutes of this 90-minute film is about their childhoods, mm-hmm. which are brazenly not interesting. their young years, which are calculatedly pointed toward one day becoming heroes.
Yes. Although, I mean,
we don't know if any of that really happened or not.
The one thing I will put it, say in this movie's credit is that it does it makes the case that you can be somebody who has never accomplished any particular great thing,
right,
and nonetheless find yourself in a situation where you are a hero.
And you just act.
Yeah.
On instinct, and because you are the kind of person who is constitutionally perhaps not afraid of things.
Right. You know,
which is what we have learned about these three young men.
Yeah.
Is that they just are like, oh, there's something wrong, I'm going to jump in.
Exactly.
And get the job done.
And so, you know, you see that over the course of like, you know, there's one guy who wanted to be a pararescuer for the Air Force, but didn't get to, and tries to do this other stuff and isn't a particularly good student at learning, you know, first aid stuff.
Right.
And isn't particularly good at these other skills and stuff. So it's not like the old...
He's kind of always struggling to catch up.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not like the old school sort of Hollywood movie where it's like they're always, you know, they were just born great and they're great, 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 great. And then this moment happens and their greatness really shines through. These guys are kind of average, but they have the right spirit and they've learned the right things along the way that happen to come in handy at this particular crux of, you know, events where where they find themselves. You have a movie that is about an incident that takes about 5 minutes to happen. And so you've got to fill the rest of it. And the rest of it is, like you said, their childhoods, which aren't interesting, which feel like something out of like a God's Not Dead movie. These awkward inclusions of God in conversations. Oh, because
they all three went to a Christian school when they were kids.
Right.
And their moms were both religious. And both Judy Greer and Jenna Fischer get a chance to... calling her by the right name, Jenna Fischer?
Yeah.
Okay.
From The Office.
I feel like I'm saying the wrong name. Both of the mothers get their chance to say something Christian-y.
Yeah.
About, you know, God spoke to me and told me that you were going to do something great. Or, you know, my God is greater than your ADD. Or
medication.
You know, like, yeah. And so, they become adults finally. And they decide to go on a European trip together, just backpacking around. And then we see them just backpacking around.
Yeah.
They go hit on girls at the discotheque. They get gelato.
They do.
Order a variety of gelatos.
Later in the episode, we're going to talk about a movie called Happy Hour, which is a 5+ hour Japanese film, whereby when people go to attend a workshop, you see the entire workshop.
In real time.
When people go out to dinner and have a conversation, you see the entire dinner and the entire conversation.
Yeah.
And there's a way dramatically to make that kind of thing fascinating and revelatory about the characters. Here, it's like... yeah, they sure did travel through Europe before getting on that fateful train. And it's like, and until then, it's nothing but selfie sticks and gelato.
They drink from the Trevi Fountain and are like, hey, look, it's the Trevi Fountain. Like, one of them actually says that.
Yes.
And when they drink from the Trevi Fountain, I thought, y'all gonna all get parasites. That is not clean.
That would have been more exciting that than most of what happens in the film. Money in
it. It is not clean but water.
It's just the whole. It's like, okay, I have this 5 exciting minutes that I want to show you where we take down a terrorist, but first you have to watch all of my vacation slides.
Yeah.
That's how this movie feels. It just, I don't get what the thought behind it was, what the banality of their pre-crisis existence was supposed to tell us about them, except for that, like, one of them knows jujitsu.
And this is the reason I think you should see it. I think you should go see this movie because it is so weird. It's this bizarre, like, ungainly juxtaposition between people who really experienced something astonishing mm-hmm. and who put their lives on the line, then being shoehorned into a docudrama about themselves, playing themselves badly. How do you fail at playing yourself? This is a question.
It's hard to do.
This film answers.
I think playing yourself is really hard to do, and I think film history is littered with people. I mean, look at Can't Stop the Music.
The Village People
playing themselves in a hokey version of how that came together, and they're not good in that movie.
So badly, yeah. I am fascinated by films like this that attempt something novel. This is a strange.
It's a weird sort of Errol Morris almost project. Kind of.
And it's this, the conceptual nature of it is what fascinates me. As much as Gus Van Sant's Psycho remake.
I see.
On that cinematic level, this is worth looking at because you will spend the entire 90 minutes wondering why it's happening.
Yeah, it's not a good movie, but the fact that it exists at all is somehow bizarrely fascinating.
Yeah. Also, I like that the film suggests that they were primed for fighting by the lack of snacks on the train.
But you know what? They get offered snacks and then they don't take them.
Yeah.
They move up to first class where the snacks are, and they're offered them, and they'll get drinks. They'll get drinks. Yeah. I'm like, well, she's got cookies on that cart. There's nuts.
They bitch about the snacks.
Yes.
And I turned to you and I said, you're not yourself when you're hungry. Have a Snickers. So in reality, what was going on is that they turned into Liza Minnelli, Betty White, and Aretha Franklin, and they were so angry that they beat the hell out of this terrorist.
Oh my God. If that had happened...
Hangry.
This would be like one of my favorite movies ever.
If Clint Eastwood had said, okay, I need you three ladies to come in and reenact the Snickers ad to take down this terrorist, and these guys are just going to poof into thin air, and they're going to turn into you. And we're going to blow everybody's mind.
If it had been like the no, it's a Tide ad thing that kept happening during the Super Bowl,
yeah.
If this entire movie had just been a complicated setup for a Snickers spot featuring Liza, Aretha, and Betty White in the roles of the terror stoppers.
I did also like, and this is not a spoiler because you all know this story.
Yes.
I did also like the ending where they're given the French Legion of Honor medal, and it's like this really fun, you know, slapping together of archival footage of the actual event and reaction shots from Judy Greer and Jenna Fischer.
Right.
And from the guys themselves. Like they are wearing the same clothes and reacting with the camera behind them.
Well, see, I don't think they reenacted anything. I think what the camera does, I think the camera.
No, you see like the backs of their heads and stuff.
Oh, okay. All right.
So they're reenacting it, but it's also mixed with archival footage, and you can tell because the video quality is
right. Like, well, I figured that Jenna Fischer and Judy Greer just got sort of Forrest Gumped into the middle of it, but that the rest of it was actual real stuff.
If only they had blue crushed it,
put their faces on the
Judy
actual
Greer and Jenna Fischer's
moms.
Faces on, like hovering a little bit in front of the other faces,
like Liam Neeson in Clash of the Titans.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not a good movie, but you kind of maybe
should
see it.
You kind of gotta watch it, yeah.
Just because it's so strangely misguided.
And,
or just misconceived, I think.
It just makes me, I know this is weird, but it makes me want to see what else Clint Eastwood is about to do. I'm back in.
It's so weird that he made this and Sully back to back, because they're on paper very similar projects. They're about these decisive moments, but he hasn't figured out a way to make a decisive
regular
moment.
Regular people who saved lives.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But he hasn't figured out how to make a decisive moment into a feature film.
Right.
So with Sully, you know, they add all that post stuff where he's
all
being...
all this made-up stuff.
Yeah, all that was hauled before the FAA or whatever. Yeah. Never happened. All invented. All to support this sort of weird, like, oh, the government's trying to take down this hero.
Right.
Never happened. And this movie sticks to the facts, but is stuck with gelato. Because there's nothing... Those are the facts. Nothing else interesting happened to these guys until that terror showed up on the train.
That gelato sequence is riveting.
Well... Which one is he going to get? There's so many choices.
Hazelnut.
Could we not spoil, please?
Hazel. He gets hazelnut.
Fine. We're going to get angry letters now, and they're going to say, P.S., now that you spoiled the 1570 to Paris,
there is no spoiling
you have
this
to
film.
Go see Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
There is no spoiling this film. You should go anyway. It's not going to be in theaters very long.
Probably not.
It didn't do very well this weekend. So you should go. I recommend. For weird reasons.
Yeah, exactly. Not for the reasons that they're selling it to you, but for other sort of cinema art reasons, yes.
Okay. You saw Peter Rabbit.
Ugh.
Is it true that he sodomizes a farmer with a carrot?
No.
Justin Chang said something about that.
I don't...
Did you fall asleep during
I did not fall asleep.
Moment Peter Rabbit sodomizes
I don't remember.
Puts a carrot up a farmer's butt. Did that not happen?
You know what? I'm not going to go on record as saying it didn't.
Did you get up to pee?
I don't remember that. I did not doze off. And I didn't hate Peter Rabbit, okay. I have to say.
What's it about?
It is based on, in the furthest stretch possible...
A true story.
The original, yes, a true story. The original, you know, the Beatrix Potter stories.
Yeah.
You know, Peter and his siblings, you know, Flopsy, Mopsy, and Cottontail, and their cousin, whose name I forget, you know, they live in the woods. They ransack Mr. McGregor's garden, even though he's always trying to get rid of them. One day, Mr. McGregor drops dead of a heart attack.
Really?
Yeah. He is played by Sam Neill.
Okay.
And the animals delight, and they take over the house and the garden and everything. They're thrilled.
Right. He's dead. Do they sing a song about it? Like
no, they just party, you know. And
hey, you guys.
And so
he's dead.
The property is left to a distant relative who never knew him, who's played by Donald Gleason,
right?
Who is this like super anal Harrods manager, who's just gotten fired for flipping out over not getting a promotion,
right?
And so he decides he's going to go like fix up the property and sell it so he can open his own toy store.
Okay.
He gets there, has to drive the animals out, is battling with Peter Rabbit and the other rabbits, despite the fact that he's falling in love with his neighbor, a kooky artist played by Rose Byrne, who takes care of the bunnies and da da da. And so it's, you know, battle, ever escalating battle of like pranks and whatnot between the rabbits and Donald Gleason. And it's okay. The trailer had me expecting something just the very worst, you know. There are some laughs in it. I did laugh. You know, a decent amount of times. As Courtney Howard tweeted today, the fact that Peter Rabbit opened to $25 million while Paddington 2 opened to 11 is why we can't have nice things. So, really, you could do worse than take your kids to Peter Rabbit, but you should only
but
be
you
allowed...
you could also do better.
You should only be allowed to see Peter Rabbit if you bought a ticket to Paddington 2
twice
first. Twice, yes. Because Peter Rabbit is whatever, and Paddington 2 is a marvel.
It is. Okay, so...
And your test, your endurance for James Corden will be tested.
James Corden has already tested my endurance of James Corden.
Okay, then you will not be down for this.
I used to find him... relatively appealing.
Yeah, me too.
He seemed, you know, happy and bouncy.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's all he is. All the time.
Yeah, somewhere around the coffee commercial, I was like, enough already with this.
And I...
Some people say they don't mind him in the movie because it's just audible James Corden and not right. visual James Corden. But, right. you know, that your mileage may vary.
Here's a tiny little movie you should see.
Mm-hmm.
Asiambra.
Mm.
That is the letter A. Siambra. C-I-A-M-B-R-A. Asiambra.
Currently nominated for Independent Spirit Award for Best Director.
Yeah. Jonas Carpenanos. Kind of sort of sequel
mm-hmm.
to a 2015 movie called Mediterranea.
Yes.
Now, in Mediterranea, a man from Burkina Faso emigrates to Italy.
Right.
To a port city called Gioia Toro. And on the margins of that film is a little kid actor named Pio Amato. Now, this film, those roles are reversed. Pio Amato is the star, and the guy from Burkina Faso, whose name I am blanking on right now, Kudu Sehon is his name. I just popped back. Anyway, he's in the sidelines. And
so it's kind of a 15-17 to Paris situation.
A little bit, yeah. Well, I'll tell you something. This is somewhat connected,
I know,
conceptually to 15-17 to Paris, because Pio Amato and his entire extended family are playing versions of themselves.
Right.
The kid is now like 14. And they are a Romani family. And they live in a weird place. Gioia Toro is a troubled location in Italy. It's a port city where, you know, drug traffic goes through to get to other countries, including the United States. And this is a town where the city council had to be, like, scrapped twice because organized crime took it over.
Right.
So organized crime runs the city, and this is in real life, and the super poor people, the African immigrants and the Romani people, mm-hmm. they live in these garbagey little, you know, enclaves out on the outskirts in this what would be the suburbs, I guess.
Right.
So this kid, Pio, lives with his huge extended family in this rundown apartment. And his father and brother wind up in prison for various crimes that they commit. The whole family is sort of devoted to petty crime.
Yeah.
As a way to, you know, make a living. They can't, you know, find jobs. So, you know, what do they got? They steal things.
So this kid suddenly finds himself sort of thrust
the man into, of the house. Yeah. And he has to become boss of the crime family. And he takes to it very well. He's determined. He's like, I'm going to go make the money. And he does. Boy, he steals cars, ransoms them back to their owners for like 300 euros. takes whatever he can find. But he makes a mistake. Encases the house of a powerful crime family. To somewhat catastrophic results.
Right.
And then he is forced to make a moral decision which will affect him and his family and his friendships. So that's all I'll tell you about the plot, because I think this is a plot worth learning as you go.
It unfolds in interesting ways.
And what I like about this filmmaker is his clear debt to the Dardens.
Yes.
Same focus, you know, marginalized people.
Right.
Who are, you know, stuck by circumstance into lives that if you ask them to their face, they would say, well, no, I don't want to do this. You know, I want to live in a better house. I want my family to have, I want my kids to have an education. I want, you know, I don't want the stress of constantly worrying about the police who harass them constantly, even when they're not committing crimes.
Right.
And it is the kind of cinema that we don't see very often because audiences tend not to want to see actual reality.
Yeah, this definitely harkens to, you know, Italian neorealism.
Italian neorealism, yes. Yeah. I mean, this kid rides a bicycle all around town and he's a thief. So, which is not exactly what Bicycle Thieves is about, but...
You get my point.
You see it happening, you're like, oh, I see you, kid, Italian child.
Thief on a bicycle.
Yeah. I like this a lot.
Yeah.
And I recommend it. It's worth seeing. And I'm interested to see if he follows this family. Because by now, you know, two films where all these people who are not actors...
Right.
...are... Boy, the camera loves them. I tell you, unlike the three dudes in 5, 15, 17, everybody in this movie is a star.
True. Like,
they are raring to go.
I mean, look
for
at
their close-ups.
You know, compare the guys in 15, 17 to almost anybody in a Sean Baker movie.
Yes, same thing.
Yeah.
All first-timers in Sean Baker movies and captivating.
Yeah.
And that's a function of direction
and
scripts and... trust between a filmmaker and his performers, a level of care and attention between the filmmaker and the performers. And I mean, the reputation that Clint Eastwood has is, you know, two takes and we're done. We're going to make the day.
Right.
You know, which helps if you're working with
Judy Greer
or Sean Penn or any of the other, you know, highly skilled veteran actors that Clint Eastwood has worked with. But, you know, when you have kids who've never set foot on a movie set before. You have to... I mean, I've never been on a Clint Eastwood set, but the story I hear is that he's an efficient director.
Yes.
And he gets his shot.
He gets her
done.
And
he moves it along.
Right.
And he doesn't have time for this Kubrickian perfectionism.
Although one of the kids does have a Full Metal Jacket poster in his bedroom.
Yeah, do you know what's the poster on his other side of his wall?
Was it Were Soldiers?
Letters to Iwo Jima.
No.
I'm not joking.
Oh.
Yeah. Thanks, Clint Eastwood. Right. So, anyway, Asiambra. Art houses.
Yes.
It's in, like, four cities right now. Eventually will be available streaming.
Yeah, it's a Sundance Selects title, so I think it will be streaming soonish.
50 Shades Free.
Oh, yeah. So, we've seen the whole trilogy now.
All 6+ hours.
Yes.
Of this...
Ding battery.
Bump and grind, but not super bumpy or grindy.
These movies are so unsexy. That's my big problem with them. I mean...
Say your thing and I'll say mine, because we kind of agree. We kind of don't agree, but go on.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right, it's the third chapter, and the movie opens with the long-anticipated wedding of Anastasia Steele, played by...
And it has my favorite cinematic and television trope of a wedding, people reciting their own vows to each other.
Oh, yes.
There is nothing that makes me want to choke a person more than watching that happen, played by Dakota Johnson,
and Christian Grey, played by James
Why'd you hire a minister? Or an efficient, if they're not going to do the heavy lifting for you. All you have to say is, I do. Literally.
Okay, there's so much else going on in this movie that I can't even unpack.
But I get I'm real stickler for that.
Okay, fine.
That's why when you and I got married, all the times that we did,
if somebody else
whether
said
they were legal
things.
Or not, somebody else said all the stuff and we just said, yes.
Yes, yeah. Sure, why not? Okay, so they get married and they go to France and frolic and everything's fab. Except that her rapey boss from last time...
They eat gelato in front of the Eiffel Tower.
They do, actually. It'd be funny if they bumped into the 1517 to Paris guys. No, they eat gelato in Venice, though, so that's totally different.
Yeah.
Anyway, so her former boss, who got fired, is now suddenly, he's a book editor, but apparently also an international cat burglar or some such, because he manages to sneak into the, one would imagine, fairly fortified, you know, gray headquarters and steal some data and set a fire in the server room. And then basically spends the whole rest of the movie stalking them as they try to get their marriage off the ground.
Right.
And they get a house and they design the house. And she tells the lady architect to keep her hands to herself. And then right. she...
Because she's literally got her hands on...
Christian.
What's his name?
Christian.
I know, but what's the actor's name?
Jamie Dornan.
Jamie Dornan. Okay, go on.
Anyway.
Yeah.
And then, oops, she gets pregnant, and then that, they have a hard time talking about that because he's not good about communicating and things and whatnot. And I don't think these movies are very sexy, even though the whole reason the books were ever popular was because it was a sort of accessible BDSM for mainstream readers. And I don't know about the books because I haven't read them, but the movies have always sort of subtly pathologized the very idea of being into BDSM.
Right.
To the point where, I mean, I guess they are because the title of this is 50 Shades Freed. And somehow the idea is that she has somehow rescued him from this awful darkness of his life and vanillaed him into being a better person.
Although they still keep their luxurious sex room.
Yes, the spanky and room is still there.
They still go there to have their fun times.
Yes.
With straps and floggy
bustiers and things.
And corsets and butt plugs and stuff like that. Can I say butt plug on a clean podcast? I just did.
I think so, yeah.
It's a plug and it's for your butt.
Yes. And what's hilarious about the BP scene is that we see it being placed.
Yes.
And then we it keeps.
Then you see her at work.
And then they cross
having a cup of tea at the office.
They cross cut to her the next day drinking tea at the office.
And you're like, are you still wearing it?
That's where I was going. Is it still there? Is it not there anymore? Is she thinking about when it was there, or is she contemplating the fact that it's still there now? Like, we don't know. Just to jump track a little, when we were going to 1517 to Paris today, I saw the poster for Tyler Perry's Acrimony.
Yes.
Which I'm very excited
about. Oh, yeah, because, you know, we've seen every Tyler Perry.
We have seen every Tyler Perry movie. And you were telling me that that there has been this sort of wave of kind of snotty people putting the film down already, you know, mostly, it's not white entirely people.
White people doing this.
Yeah.
And that is, here's the thing, having seen every Tyler Perry movie, and some of them are howlers, let's not be disingenuous about this. Some of them are
beyond Confessions
bonkers.
Of a Marriage Counselor and For Colored Girls.
And also Why Did They Get Married Too? Like
exactly, yes.
At least three of them are total screamers. And I'm not talking about the Madea movies because those are legitimately fun most of the time. White people's anticipation of another screamer is misplaced because every once in a while, he just makes a perfunctory, kind of boring one.
Yes.
And that's what this could be. Like, you don't even know.
Yeah, it could be Good Deeds instead, you know. But what I'm saying is people shouldn't make fun of, this Tyler Perry movie we haven't seen yet, unless they've seen all the other Tyler Perry movies. I also find that people are crapping on the 50 Shades movies without having seen them, because somehow the idea of movies that are glossy fantasy for women is somehow dumb, as opposed to the glossy fantasy for men, usually in a superhero costume that we get on like a weekly basis.
Right.
So I'm all for a female audience having equal access to like ridiculous, glossy, you know, escapism.
Well, here it is.
But this is terrible, glossy escapism. Like, you could, these movies, I don't know about these movies because they're stuck with those books, but I'm saying there are much smarter movies that you could make that press all the buttons, if you will, of these films. And these are just not very well made or well executed, but I do want movies like this to exist for an audience that is clearly hungry for them.
Let's go back to talking about Tyler Perry for a moment.
Sure.
Because I will tell you what I like about this. Remember, I Can Do Battle by Myself?
Yes.
Okay. Taraji P. Henson
mm-hmm.
is giving a performance
yes.
in that film. Bad movie.
Yes.
Bad movie.
But she showed up.
But she ready is, to work. She is delivering.
Yes.
All throughout. All right. And then Mary J. Blige comes in and sings the theme song. And that is, that's your knock it out of the park.
And moment. Gladys Knight sings in that song. Gladys Knight too, right?
Yeah. Okay. So anyway. So you got a bad film with performances happening.
Uh-huh.
All right. I submit that Dakota Johnson is working hard in these three films. I'm going to tell you why. Her character has an arc. I'm not saying that the things she does are smart or, you know, that you should emulate them, that you should enter into a, what is officially an abusive relationship. In the hope of changing him and then succeeding because you're just so guileless and good. That's not, we're not applauding that. I am giving you, I'm giving a hand to Dakota Johnson inhabiting this person and earning everything she gets in this film.
She is
also
super charming. I'll give you that.
She's not afraid of what these films are. She knows as an actress, and she's giving you, I think, indications, you know, throughout the film that she's had a handle on this from the beginning. That she saw him and he took her to the sex dungeon and she said, "You don't stand a chance.
I got this.
I got this." As an actress, she is doing what actresses are very often these days afraid to do, and rightly so, okay? Remember in the 70s, everything went wild, and you had Last Tango in Paris, and people having sex on screen and stuff, and then finally you learn, years later, that Maria Schneider was not treated well on that set. That's understatement.
Yeah.
Okay.
Google it if you really want to know.
And then all through the 80s, you've got increasingly gratuitous female nudity, never male nudity, female nudity, because, hey, look, we're all sexually liberated now so that men can objectify women anywhere they want, all over the place in theaters. And actresses got hip to that. And grew to demand some power in their own, you know, working lives and said, guess what? My contract has a no nudity clause. Deal with it. If you want a sex scene, I'll be wearing a bra the whole time. Ha, ha, ha! Now, it takes you right out of the movie to have nobody being nude in a sex scene. Mm-hmm. But at least what you have now is a working environment where a lot of actresses, as they gain clout and power in the industry, will say, yeah, not doing that. But she,
I think,
Hollywood royalty,
right? But
she is, she comes in and says, I'll do it. I'll do that.
Yeah, I think, and you have often, to do this you movie, do. You know.
And it is, but who would say no to that? Well, a lot of people would say no to that. She did not. And she was willing to not only do explicit sex scenes where, once again, you know, the nudity is not really equivalent. You know, you get his butt like once or whatever. And she's also willing to do a very French sort of quotidian sort of nudity.
Yes.
Where she's just walking around her closet getting dressed. And,
well,
and
let's not forget her mother famously vacuumed topless in Working Girl.
That is correct. So I admire Dakota Johnson's
moxie?
Willingness to do what she knows must happen in this kind of film. I think she is trying to tell her own story in these patently ludicrous films. Okay? Very much like Taraji P. Henson in I Can Do Battle by Myself, Dakota Johnson is giving you something in these three movies that are all three of them, let's not be unclear about this, bad films.
Look, she's better than the material.
Yes.
I grant you. And she is charming enough that you want to watch
her, even though, you know, the movie is bollocks.
Yes.
But the movie's still bollocks.
It's fun to look at because the production design is
glossy luxury porn.
Rich people. Yeah. And it makes you forget that you hate rich people while you're watching it.
Right.
You just look at it and go, oh, look at that. Look at that. Ooh, look at that house kitchen. Ooh, look, ooh, a staff. They have a staff. Someone just walks up to you each day and says, what would you like to have for breakfast? And you just tell them. And then they make it for you.
As I said on What the Flick, my hope is that in that, you know, these novels began as Twilight fan fiction.
Yeah.
I'm hoping now that this film series is done, that for these two actors, they will go on to have Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson style.
She already is, because she was in A Bigger Splash.
Yes, she was, definitely. And
Jamie Dornan is in a TV show, an acclaimed British television show called The Fall, which I think it's finished. I think it's done.
Yes.
And I have not seen it, but he's got to be a better actor than what they allow him to be in these three films, because he's kind of like nothing.
He is kind of like nothing. But worse than that, he has no chemistry with her.
Not really.
But we like her.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, not only is the movie built around her POV.
Well, it's easy to dislike his character because his character is like a weak person who is constantly
is a brute
telling you how strong he is all the time. Yeah.
But I mean, but the thing is, the movies are built around her POV and she is just so, you know, charismatic that because they don't have any chemistry, that makes us like him a lot less because why aren't you better with her when we like her so much?
Right. You know? Yeah. I'm on her team. Why aren't you on her team? You married it. Yeah. Again, if you have not seen these films, you don't need to see these films. But, you know, pay attention to these two actors as time goes on, because I really think they are worth...
They're off to more interesting
the careers things. That they, I think they're going to have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, happy hour.
Yes.
We have instituted a bit of a tradition in this home.
We spend our Super Bowl Sunday
watching a super long movie.
Yes. And this year, we had heard good things about this film. We love Manolo Dargis. I have met Richard Brody from doing a jury with him, and I'm a fan
of his reviews from a long way back.
Yeah. He and Manolo rarely agree. So when they both like something, attention must be paid.
Right. So, Japanese filmmaker, Rusuke Hamaguchi.
Yes.
Has made like 6, 7, 8 movies.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen any of them until now. Now, in 2016, this film, Happy Hour, played in New York City for 1 week at MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art. It was screened one time each day. The reason? It is 5.5 hours long.
Yes.
And I'll tell you something. That is not a release. That is not a theatrical release. That doesn't count. Because...
Oh, that week at MoMA, you mean? Yeah.
A few hundred, maybe?
Right.
Went to MoMA that week. It began, I read this in Richard Brody's review, it began every day at 4:00 in the afternoon.
Mm.
What a convenient time to start a film on a Tuesday. And who got to see it? Like, nobody got to see it.
Right.
So, just this past November, December in 2017, it finally arrives on DVD.
Right.
Domestically released in the United States on DVD.
Icarus Home Video.
Thank you, Icarus Home Video. You have now given this film a release in the United States.
Did it play any other cities? No.
Not
even like San Francisco?
My understanding is that it played one day.
Seven times
in New York.
Wow.
2 years ago. And that's it.
Yeah.
So now, anybody who wants to can finally see this film. And let's be real, in the comfort of your home.
Mm.
I'll tell you something about watching movies in a museum. Always a death sentence for your butt.
Museums never care whether or not you are even remotely comfortable to watch a film.
Even the Bing at LACMA?
The Bing at LACMA is fine. And that's where they showed the clock.
Yes.
Christian Marclay's 24-hour film.
Right. I saw the first 9 hours of it there.
Yes. But do you know what they did? Do you know what LACMA did with the clock when they stopped showing it in the Bing?
Oh,
they just showed it in one of the galleries, and you sat on a bench.
That's where I saw the other, like, 15 hours of it.
On a bench!
Yeah.
Okay, that's what museums do to you all the time. I've gone to see so many video installations.
Well, and I bet the theater at MoMA is...
What do you think? Do you think it's good?
I bet it's closer to the
Bing. You think it's as good as the Hammer?
I think it's...
Because the Hammer will kill you.
I think it's closer to the Bing than it is to a bench.
The Hammer Museum in Los Angeles. I love the Hammer Museum in Los Angeles. Yeah. But you better really want to go see a movie.
Yeah, the Billy Wilder Theater seats are not the comfiest.
Those seats are killers. There have been films I've seen in there where I have to get up and stand in the back. Because it hurt just sitting in those seats.
Right.
Anyway. the conditions of theatrical screenings notwithstanding, Happy Hour is... an incredible movie. And if you are balking, if you are reluctant to sit down and watch it because it's 5.5 hours, think about the times you have binged television shows.
Exactly.
And how long you've sat on your couch on a Saturday or Sunday watching
how many Sopranos in a row did you watch? How many Breaking Bads in a row have you ever watched?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, it's doable.
Get with this, all right? It's about four women who live in Kobe, Japan.
Yes.
And they're all in their late 30s. And they are great friends.
Yes.
One of them is sort of the central friend. She's known one of them for 25 years, and the others she has known for a less amount of time, but she has...
Brought them all together.
Brought them all together, and they are inseparable. I'm thinking about this whole Sex and the City feud this week, and how disheartening that is.
Yeah.
Because you see... You watch Sex and the City, and, you know, I hesitate to use this word very often, but it fits here, such a sort of iconic American television program where characters who become part of the national consciousness, you know, exist, and you want to live that fantasy. You want to believe that these four women would be there for each other no matter what.
Apparently.
And you don't want to know the behind the scenes who hates who.
Right.
But now we all know the who hates who.
Yes.
Well, I have a new set of four friends that you can fall in love with. Because by the end of this movie, I sat there on the couch with you and our friends, Matt Severson, Academy Matt, came over.
Art film bro Matt.
Art film brother Matt. Yes. And I at the end of this movie, I said... I need this to be a show. I need to follow them weekly. I need to know what they are doing every week in minute, real-time detail, because that is how this film goes down. At the beginning of the movie, in the first 90 minutes or so, they attend a sort of New Agey spiritual workshop together.
Yes.
And it goes down in kind of like real-time. Like
pretty
it's
much.
A 30-minute-long sequence.
Yeah.
Where they move from sort of observing this stuff to participating.
Yes.
And you're watching little intimate details of their lives together unfold in this otherwise sort of non-consequential atmosphere.
Yeah. It's like a Nicholson Baker novel or something where they just like little tiny moments, but they just dig really deep and show you all this stuff. And they aren't telling you what it all means, but you get to know these four characters
so well
just literally from having spent time with them and seeing how they respond to things and what's, you know, how they respond to other people and what they react to in their lives and what's important to them and you know, it you could race through this material, but it wouldn't be giving you the depth of character that you get just from sheer observation.
The style of the directorial style is very much this almost anti-style. There is just a lot of shots of them just sitting in a room or sitting on a bus or sitting in a hot spring that they go to, or most memorably for me, sitting in a courtroom. One of them is trying. Apparently, the laws in Japan about divorce are much different than they are here, because
they can decide not to give you one.
Yeah, they can decide not to grant you a divorce. And so one of them is trying to get a divorce from her husband, who's just a jerk. Mm. And the other three are not sitting together, but they are like perfectly composed in the shot behind her as she finds out that the structure of Japanese society is rigged against her, and they are all behind, and they literally have her back. Mm. In this scene. And it's just, it's the one scene in the movie that I feel is composed in a way that is sort of very pointed, you know. The rest of it is about observing the details of these four people interacting. And all four of these actresses got the Best Actress Award
at Locarno.
At the Locarno Film
Festival.
Yeah,
they shared it.
They shared it. And I love this.
Yeah.
It reminded me, in a way, of Selena and Julie Go Boating, not only for its durational mm-hmm. qualities, but in the way that through this weird journey that they take, and obviously Selena and Julie is a supernatural,
dream-like, yeah.
a dreamlike supernatural journey, but the way these four women walk through each other's lives mm. and interconnect with each other, and at the end of it come out still with each other.
Yeah.
I'd watch it again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love movies about women's friendships, especially when, you know,
movies about friendships in general, like how often do you get a movie about friendships that True. Isn't like filled with some bizarre, like, thing that tries to rip them apart.
Right. Some imposed plot thing.
Now, there is stuff in this film that challenges their friendships.
Absolutely.
But it doesn't feel dropped down on them.
Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, in general, yes. But I say women's friendships just because we see those even more rarely. But, yeah, no, I found this compelling. And yeah, there are moments where you think, where you feel like, wow, I am watching a 5-hour movie.
Yeah.
But then something else will happen and you'll just sort of get swept up in it. And then by the time it's over, the aggregate of it feels like every moment counted for something.
Yes.
And there were like, there's nothing you'd say like, oh, well, that needs to go. Like, no, it all added up to this cumulative effect that the movie has.
So if you want to call this our collective DVD pick of the week, you can. But I'm calling this a new release. Because ain't nobody got to see this movie when yeah. it came out in New York at MoMA other than Manola Dargis and Richard Brody. And
exactly.
A handful of people who wandered into MoMA.
No, I was going to say, I was going to ask what your DVD pick was this week, because I was not going to count this as that.
Well, it is and it isn't, so there
okay,
you go.
Very well.
I win.
All right. I was going to say,
please watch this movie. Take the time. Give yourself a Saturday or Sunday. Take breaks. We did. We took snack breaks.
It's on two discs, so it's got a built-in break for you anyway.
But you'll want more.
Yes, and take them. It's fine.
Yeah.
Just pick up where you left off.
Because I can't sit and watch anything for 5.5 hours yeah. without moving. First of all, you have to pee.
You have to pee.
You have to get snacks. We had meatball sliders.
We did.
We had Rotel dip in the crock pot.
Because mm-hmm. it was Super Bowl Sunday.
It was Super Bowl Sunday, so we had Super Bowl
snacks-based
snacks. For this film.
Aretha was not in our apartment. Nobody was hungry.
Nobody was
hangry. we have some new 5-star review, or letters and 5-star reviews.
There's a letter.
Okay.
From Paul. I've been learning Thai for the last 2 years. And given that you talk about him occasionally, kind of more than occasionally, yeah. like he comes up a lot. I feel like I should correct you on how to pronounce Pichatpong Wirasathakul's name.
Mm.
You guys do a fine pronunciation of the name, except his last name should end in an N sound, Wirasathakun.
Pichatpong Wirasathakun. Okay.
This is because of a rule in Thai that when an L comes at the end of the word, it is pronounced as an N. Obviously, you would never know that based on his name on how his name is transliterated into English, and that is thanks to the Royal Thai General System of Transcription only making sense to people who already know Thai, and therefore completely useless as a system for transliterating Thai words.
And by transliterating, he means turning it from the Thai written language.
This is the best letter we have ever been written. Paul, we're friends now.
We learned a thing. Thank you for that.
You taught me a thing about one of my favorite filmmakers, one of my favorite living filmmakers that really matters to me, because I love his name. I love Thai names in general because they're gloriously lengthy and complicated. And I always hesitate to say Joe because he's always telling Americans, oh, just call me Joe. I'm not going to even let you bother pronouncing my name because I want you to call me Joe, but I want to try. I live to try.
And now you're going to throw that N out and really impress
people. I'm
going to
work the N
all
over the place. And I'm going to memorize this explanation.
Wida Sethakun.
Thank you, Paul. Oh, look, I'm clicking keep as new in my email box.
Your overstuffed email box.
My email box only has 13,000 emails.
Oh, you're right. A mere.
Listen, I follow Tracy Clayton from the podcast. Why am I blanking on the name?
Another Round.
Another Round podcast. I follow her on Twitter. She tweets as Brokey McPoverty, which is the greatest Twitter name, next to Charles Entertainment Cheese.
Yes, well.
As our friend Brian tweets as that. She apparently has like 60,000 emails.
Well, y'all both need to get your act together. You both have a problem.
Natalie says, Happy New Year to you, Dave and Alonzo. It is such a pleasure to keep on listening to your conversations now that I have moved back to Paris, France.
Oh, nice. Have the gelato.
On this brand new day, I wanted to have a thought for our dear Agnes Varda. I know she means a lot to you. The last time I heard you talk about her, it was for the release of Visage Village, Faces Places. I was moved to tears because I realized that her work, the way she sees the world, transcends the language and the frontiers. I had never thought about that before, and I felt really connected to you on this day.
Thank you,
Dad. So I wanted to thank you for praising her work. She is such an old lady now and still so vital and young at heart. Viva Agnes! And Happy New Year again.
That's lovely. And I'm so excited that she's up for an Oscar for Faces Places.
Because, you know what I'm excited about?
What?
That cardboard cutout she sent to the
lunch. Yes! The cat.
Oh, my God.
That was adorable. Google image the Academy Oscar nominee luncheon. She sent a cardboard cutout of her holding a cat. But if she wins, like she will have won an honorary Oscar and an actual competitive Oscar in the same year,
yep.
Which is really groovy.
Reviews on iTunes?
Apple Podcasts, yeah.
Yeah, or Apple Podcasts, whatever they call it.
That's what they're calling it now, I don't know.
You got a review for us on Apple Podcasts? 5 is the magic number. That's the number of stars that you're going to give us. You heard?
Don't be mean.
I'm not being mean. I'm being expectant.
You're sending your intentions out into the universe.
That's right. My intention is for you to give us a 5-star review.
It's the secret.
This is from KWS in WA.
Yeah, KWS in Washington, I guess.
I followed David Alonzo to Linoleum Knife from Pop Rocket.
Oh, yay.
The movie reviews are thoughtful and thorough. I appreciate that they will flat out say not to bother going to some movies.
We sure will.
Boy King 3D says, I have discovered a ton of great movies because of this podcast, and the reviews are thorough. Oh, another we've been
so
described
thorough.
As thorough twice in a row.
We're thoroughly thorough, Millie.
And never get annoying.
You sure about that? I don't know if that's true, but okay.
I get annoyed by myself.
We'll go with that.
On an almost daily basis. Look, all I can really say is that I turned my car volume up to 33. When I listen, because that's the age Jesus was. That should be enough to convince you to subscribe. Thanks,
Boy King 3D.
Count 333. Says, aside from listening to David Alonso talk about movies, if you listen to Linoleum Knife, you'll get to hear about the relationship of a married couple who share the same line of work and fully support each other. My fiancé and I share enough traits with them that listening to them makes me feel good about the odds of success of my own relationship. I think of them as my podcast, Gay Uncle Friends. Oh. And I know that if I ever saw Dave walking on the street, I would have to shout at him from afar. If I saw Alonso on the street, I would be less inclined to shout at him from afar, but only because it would feel disrespectful to me somehow. Well, check it out, dude. Today, a guy just yelled out, "What the flick? What's up?" to you.
Yeah, shout away.
So you can
It'll
yell.
It'll be fine. I'll be thrilled.
If you yell at me, I will be shocked and maybe afraid and try to run away from you. I will think stranger danger. So maybe don't yell. Maybe just come up to me and say, "Dave, hello.
You don't know me, boss.
I am Count 333. My mother named me this.
I'm half the devil."
Exactly. Summerlin Dreams says, "Alonzo and Dave are utterly delightful."
No.
"I love their chemistry, their differing opinions, the no-frills style of their discussions, and the added bonus of always hearing what Dave has on the menu." Oh, guess what's on the menu today? Nothing. Zero things. I ain't cooking a thing today. Day off.
We're going out for roast beef.
Going out for roast beef sandwiches somewhere. "I work from home and their voices keep me company on what would otherwise be an endless silent day full of spreadsheets."
Ugh.
"Thank you for everything you do." Well, thank you for these 5-star reviews. Did you hear what I said? 5-star reviews.
Thank you so much for that. We appreciate
it. There is no other style of review but a 5-star review.
And say, why don't you join our club? We have a Patreon page, patreon.com/linoleumknife. And for as little as $4 a month, you can get extra content from us. Shows like LKTV, a podcast of the television. Linoleum Knife and Fork, a food podcast hosted by 2 film critics. Or Linoleum Nights. Or cool prizes like t-shirts and mugs. And
tote bags and enamel pins and other t-shirts.
Yes.
Yes.
All the things.
You can join, I recommend, at the $4 or $7 or $12 level. I love all of you who join at the $16 and $20 level, but there are plenty of you for the amount of work that I can accomplish. In fact, I'll tell you this, there's more of you than for the amount of work that I can accomplish, because I just recently learned that some of you at all levels have fallen through the cracks of my filing system.
Oh, Dave.
Much to my chagrin. At the end of the beginning of the year, I thought I had accomplished pretty much everybody. Oh, no, 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 no. I had not. Not at all. I'm scrambling now to catch up by the end of this month to get everybody accounted for and taken care of. I feel like a failure at this moment in my life.
You kind of are.
Because I know I am. We also ran out of mugs, so I got to order new mugs to get the people their mugs. It's everything. Listen,
still,
I'm going to get it fixed.
Please join our club.
If you'd like to
join, we'll get it taken care of. I promise.
Don't quit being a 16 or 20. I'll get you handled. But if you'd like to join, if you join at 4 or 7 or 12, it's so much easier for me.
Look, you joined at the level you want. They're there for a reason. So you don't let Dave.
But do join because
talk you out of anything.
We love having you guys in the club. We love having the monthly club meeting movie watch that we do on a Saturday night.
Yep.
We all stream a movie together and talk on Google Hangout while it's going down.
This month we're doing To Kill a Mockingbird.
To Kill a Mockingbird, a classic,
yes.
Black and white film from the back from the olden times
of the 1960s.
Yeah.
So, go check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com and listen to Canceled Too Soon and Critically Acclaimed with Bibbs and Whitney. Check out The Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, The Comics Canon. There was something that I was going to promote this week, and I'm totally forgetting what. Oh, our friend of the show, Louis Vertel, has a new show called Keep It that's very entertaining.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And a couple of my colleagues at The Wrap have a show called Shoot This Now, where they suggest things that should be made into movies. This week, it's a Craigslist ad where a guy is offering up a room for people to have affairs in. It's a pretty funny episode. Check those out. And, of course, Fat Guys at the Movies, the Criterion cast, Film Spotting SVU, and Secretly Timid. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at LinoleumCast. As Dave said, 5-star reviews are very welcome at Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe to the show there for free. We also welcome your positive feedback in all the places that we stream, including Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Google Music, Spotify, Podify, I think is one of them.
Really?
Yes, I think, or no, Podible, sorry. P-O-D-I-B-L-E. We're on Podible.
Squatify. Snotify.
CastBox, Podbean, iVoox, you name it. You can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments or requests for Dave to see Lara Croft Tomb Raider.
No.
And until next time.
No. 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 I'm telling you, no. No.
Until next time.
Goodbye.